feeling of euphoria that runs throughout my body. I like to sit, you know, I like to sit nude with my coffee, you know, on my computer in the morning sometimes. Or
what'd you just say?
Honestly, I get erect every time I look at this guy.
Calm down, jeez.
Mr. Burgundy, you have a massive erection.
Really?
Peekaboo, you fucks you. I see you, you motherfucker.
Do you want to talk, or do you want to bet?
We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, a whole galaxy of multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, lappers, also a quarter tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, 2 dozen emails.
Counting cards is a foolproof system.
It's also illegal.
It's not illegal, it's frowned upon, like masturbating on an airplane.
I'm pretty sure that's illegal, too.
Yeah, maybe after 9/11, where everybody gets so sensitive. Thanks a lot, Binbot.
So here we are yet again, Vegas Confessions. How's my buddies doing out there? What do you guys got going on?
Doing good, brother. How about you guys?
Everything's wonderful.
Living the dream. So we actually took a little bit of, this is going to be a little bit of an impromptu podcast. We got a really good, a good friend and somebody that you guys are going to know on the other side. And we're going to kind of lead him in. But we just want to welcome you to Vegas Confessions. I'm Shane.
I'm Julian.
I'm Eric.
And here we go. And the other one to introduce is the none only, but Michael Traeger himself. What's going on, man?
Hey, everything's great. I mean, it's been a nice day. It's a little bit late right now, but I'm enjoying this very twilight interview. I feel like I should probably go grab a cocktail, but then I'm liable to fall asleep on you.
Oh, no, I feel bad
it
because
be the first time you fell asleep on me. You fell asleep in AC when we was drinking at the bar. I have pictures. You remember?
But that was like four. I think it was already like 4 o'clock in the morning at that point. What was the name of that place? That was a great. That was
the little bar across the way. I know the Do for a Win guys are gonna kill us right now. It was the wing place across the street. That bar. You remember what it was called, Eric?
Piccadilly
right? Pub.
There it is.
Yeah,
yes,
I wasn't there, but I'm sure that's what you're talking about. Across from the Irish pub.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Piccadilly. Yes,
sir. Good times. Good times. And if some of you guys remember, we talked about, what was it, our post Zorkfest trip when we came back, and I mentioned Michael Traeger and the Hard Four story. Why don't you go ahead and elaborate a little bit on that Hard Four story?
Oh, it was that guy's birthday. I forgot his name, though. You see,
this is the Andre, the new guy. Yeah.
Andre. Well, that was when we had that little challenge that if we rolled a hard four, we had to run to the top of the escalator at Bally's and then back down. And I don't think anybody believed that that was actually going to happen. But we rolled the hard four and it did happen.
That's I laughed my ass off when I saw those fucking videos. I was like, really? And the security guard even was just staring, didn't do anything, just watching it. Everybody was clapping and waiting. It was great. It's so funny.
Well, you know, I'm thinking I'm honestly much more of a hard 8 and a hard 6 kind of guy, but there was just something about the hard 4. I think it was Andre's fault. Andre was all into the hard 4. But it was good fun. That was actually a really, really fun crap session. I'm hoping we're going to have some like that in Vegas. That could be sort of fun.
Oh, man.
That would be awesome. That whole trip was good. That whole thing that you orchestrated and you and Eric together, and just amazing. Just neat. And, you know, we're going to repeat it here in Vegas coming up. But mainly, we wanted to just hear you, sir, are full of just legends and stories and everything of you from Atlantic City to Vegas. And that's what we want to hear on this one. That's kind of where we brought you in. And, you know, we just want we want you to tell your fables.
Oh, so you want you want all the Vegas fables, right? I mean, that's there are quite a few. My oldest memory of Vegas was in the late 1970s. I was around 9 years old, And I believe that was my first trip. I have – what's really interesting is I've got this crazy memory about certain things, but it's completely visual about certain elements of trips. And I remember that trip in the 1970s to Caesar's Palace so well. There are just elements of that that I remember so well. I remember going to the Japanese restaurant. Mm-hmm. At Caesar's Palace. I remember the suite that we stayed in. I mean, I guess I should back up a little bit. At that time, as the story goes, my dad was a treasurer for a company. It was a small privately held semiconductor company. And his boss was a big craps player. Don't you love that? No. And my dad had to take a trip out to Vegas. At least, you know what? I'm going to stick with this story because I haven't verified it in a lot of years. But he had to take a trip out to Vegas to pay off some of his boss's markers. And we basically were treated like royalty at Caesar's Palace. And we did have that whole Rain Man suite thing, which was like as good as you could get in the late 1970s. And I was this very strange only child, like used to traveling all the time with my parents. And there is one picture of me in Vegas. I haven't been able to locate it for a couple of years, but it's absolutely hysterical. They literally dressed me up in a blue velvet jacket with a big bow tie.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was dressed to the nines, like totally pimped out to go out in Vegas, you know, me, this like 9-year-old kid. Yeah. But I remember I was obsessed as a child with Japanese food, and Caesar's Palace had a Japanese restaurant at the time, which I believe was right by Cleopatra's Barge, which is still there, which was called the Ah So Steakhouse at Caesar's Palace.
Jesus.
And I'm looking right now, and I actually should bring this book when we're in Vegas, but I'm looking right now at the hotel directory, the This Is Caesar's Palace hotel directory, and I'm reading the description of the Ah So Japanese restaurant. But that was – I remember dining there, and they gave you these little – they always give you these towels in Japanese restaurants to wash your hands. Mm-hmm. And it came in a little wicker basket. I don't know why I remember this shit. And I asked my mom if she could ask them if I could have the little wicker basket. I don't know why I was obsessed with that. But it was really It was really a cool, you know, just cool vision, I mean, of that kind of stuff. I also remember a little bit the other early trip to Vegas that I remember is when we went to MGM. And this was MGM pre-fire. And
oh, okay.
I remember MGM, and I still have a vision of playing Keno in the morning at breakfast at MGM. That's how strange my memory is, yeah, with that kind of stuff.
Wow.
I mean, and in some ways, I the thing that gets me is I like wish I could go back and experience what Vegas was like during that time again. Because if you ask me, and I was really lucky to be at the Stardust the last couple of years and take quite a few trips to the Stardust, but that time, I think the best time ever to be in Vegas was the 1970s. I think it was just the perfect time to be in Vegas, and I just wish somehow I could go back in a time machine and just walk around all of those casinos, because it was all before the big mega casinos came in the early 90s, and you just had all of these old classic resorts, and it was just such a gambler's town, and you had all the cheap eats and everything that you thought was like amazing about Las Vegas.
That I'm with you. I mean, I think that is, I look at those pictures of when you can see the strip down, and it's funny. I've got one on my laptop where it's actually from the sign of Circus Circus. Same clown, mind you, never moved. same thing sitting out there, but you can see the Stardust and Sands and everything straight down the strip. It's an old black and white photo from like 73, 74, and just amazes me. I mean, not saying Vegas isn't great now, but it changes. You know, you see the time change and the evolvement of what that city is. It just, it blows my mind. Makes me smile at ear to ear when I think about it.
I have to agree with you guys, because I was spending some time on YouTube and looking at some of the older videos, like he said, 70s, 80s, and, you know, I wasn't even a thought back then. But that being said, I was looking at a couple videos of the Mint and the neon light that ran across the front all the way up to the top of the building. Really, really cool. And then I just started venturing off and looking at other properties. Really neat stuff, man. So, I mean, my generation missed out on a lot of cool shit.
Yeah.
I got a question, yeah. Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So you've made proclamations about the Stardust many times. And for those of our listeners that never got to see the Stardust, could you explain what was so special about it? Because it's not really in line with the type of casinos you stay at currently.
Yeah, I love talking about that. First of all, I guess I have to back up a little. I started to really get into casino gambling, believe it or not, when I was in Southern Indiana. And that's where I got most of my gambling knowledge from. And my first time going to the Stardust, there was a host company back then, and I had spoken to them. I don't know exactly how it happened, but I had spoken to them about something, and they had suggested I go to the Stardust. And there was a mistake. It wasn't really a mistake fare, but there was just a really, really low fare from Cincinnati to Las Vegas. It was like $92 round trip. And I hadn't been to Vegas in years at that point, like years and years. And I said, you know what? This $92 fare. And back then I was mostly handling the kids and my wife was traveling a lot. And I just decided, like a maniac, to literally take a flight that was going to land in Las Vegas at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And mind you, I hadn't been to Las Vegas now probably for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was just going to land at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and go directly to Stardust. I had this plan and go directly to Stardust and just gamble. And then I was taking the 1 a.m. red eye home. And that that was literally.
Oh, wow.
So that's how I reintroduced myself to Vegas after a lot of years. And it was at the Stardust. And I can't tell you, it is still the most magical memory in my life. I remember landing. I remember it like it was yesterday. And it wasn't that long ago, but I landed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I went directly to Stardust, and I went directly to the Baccarat room, because they had this great Baccarat room.
Of course
at Stardust.
You did.
It was, and who was there? This woman, Shirley. And Shirley was one of the Baccarat supervisors. Well, lo and behold, and I would become friends with her over the years, she was basically the first female Baccarat dealer in all of Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
And she was trained by Rosenthal. Not this Rosenthal.
I was going to say.
I'm the righty.
That's right. So Lefty, she was actually trained by Lefty. And to see the pictures of her when she was younger, she was an attractive woman in her 70s.
Hey, baby, I got all of Murder, She Wrote on DVD.
But when you saw the pictures of her when she was younger, and back then when the Baccarat, there were very few female dealers. There were no female Baccarat dealers. They literally were like dressed up in tuxedos, and it was hysterical. So I got incredible stories all the time. And I would ask her, you know, on subsequent trips, I was like, what was it like working for Rosenthal? And she's like, you know, what would happen a lot, and I always remember her saying this, she says, we'd all get fired a lot and then rehired the next day. it was just that time, you know, he just had such a temper. But, you know, I mean, it was amazing. So literally I sat down, I played Baccarat for a couple of hours, and I asked for a comp, and it was total old school kind of thing. They gave me a comp to the Japanese restaurant. Notice a trend there. And I went to the Japanese restaurant, which was actually quite good at the Stardust. Really good sushi bar.
Wow.
And I had dinner. And then I came back and continued to play Baccarat. And mind you, I was playing big Baccarat, where they passed a shoe around the table, $25 minimum table, which is really good for Big Bock, and my flight was at about, it was the late flight from Vegas to Minneapolis, connecting back to Cincinnati, and I think it was either 1:10 or 1:30 in the morning. Well, lo and behold, I don't know, it must be after 11 o'clock. I mean, it's getting close to when I have to get going. I hit a streak at Baccarat, so I can't leave because it keeps, you know, I keep winning player hands. So then finally the streak ends and Shirley's like, you know, okay, you're definitely done now. So I've won money for the night. I've had this incredible half a day trip. And the best thing is, I'm like, oh, shit, I've got to get to the airport and I'm really late. And she's like, don't you worry. And she called one of the security guys from Stardust and they literally pulled around like the security van and he hightailed it with me to the airport. And I was dropped off in this.
Oh, my God. That is cool.
That's awesome.
It was just such a strange trip. And I was so drunk by the time I got to the airport, and I remember just getting on the plane, having like one vodka. I know, my upgrade had cleared. I was not even high level Northwest back then, but I think it was like a 1:30 a.m. flight on a Wednesday. I got on, I asked for like a double vodka, and then I just literally passed out until Minneapolis, and it was awesome. It was like, it's one of the best day memories. But you know what's so cool about it to me is this was a totally solo trip. This was just me in my own little world, my gambling world, my mm-hmm. own. I'm not interacting with anybody else. And it was just fabulous.
Do you think those are more memorable trips or the ones who, you know, when you go as a group, or can you really judge? I mean, between the two, because it is a different feel.
For sure. Yeah, I can judge for sure. I'll tell you this. I mean, here's a little known secret. I pretty much so hate people and like dogs, but but honestly, if my favorite time in the casino, and this is it, I mean, serious favorite time for me in the casino a lot of times is when I'm alone. I am so happy to just be alone in a casino. That's not to say that I don't love hanging out with people and I don't love group trips and stuff like that, but solo time, I mean, I feel I have this like feeling of euphoria that runs throughout my body. If I know I can be in a casino and do whatever I want and walk, especially when you're in Vegas, and walk to whatever casino properties you want and do whatever you want, and you're not accountable to anyone, you don't need to meet up with anyone or do it, you can just gamble and drink and just be in your own little world. And I love it.
What would be one of your favorite trips?
Okay, there were a couple of really favorite Stardust trips. That was one of them. My other favorite Stardust trip was the final weekend at the Stardust. That was fun. But I will tell you, one of the most memorable Vegas trips for me was my New Year's Eve trip. And that trip was it felt like it's out of a movie, like the my recollections. So basically it was New Year's Eve in Vegas. I always wanted to do New Year's Eve in Vegas. So I was with my family in Puerto Rico. I flew from San Juan to Vegas. I got in on like the 30th on New Year's Eve. I had an early dinner with a really good friend of mine and his girlfriend, but he was leaving town right away. And then I decided to host a suite party at Paris. So I was at Paris and we hosted a suite party, and that was fine. And then, you know, after the suite party, you know, we went out, we saw the fireworks. And I honestly, to anybody, I really suggest, if you haven't done New Year's Eve in Vegas, you've got to do New Year's Eve in Vegas at least once. Highly, highly suggested. My two life suggestions.
What year was that? Which New Year's? Do you remember?
Which, it wasn't that long ago.
Oh, I put you on the spot now. Sorry. I just said you because that sets it up for, you know, what's going on and in the, you know, the world and the country and things, and then Vegas and where Vegas was at the time. You know, that's why I was just curious about it. Not a big deal.
It's in, you know, I'm trying to think. Usually the way that I figure out when something was is I look back at my pictures, but it would be, it was within the last 10 years.
Oh, okay. For sure. Okay.
I mean, and I'll tell you, you can usually date it by this. So we had this sweet party. Everything was fine. But one of my buddies had a I was with him, and then he was with this girl that was under 21. So we wound up going down to the casino floor at Paris, and it was really, really crowded. And immediately she was underage and they had to leave. So then I was left alone. And I think this must have been like 2 o'clock in the morning. And from there, it's just this foggy memory of amazing Vegas stuff. I played a little longer at Paris. Everything was really good. And then I decided to go over to Cosmopolitan. And I had never played at Cosmopolitan before. Cosmopolitan was very new at that time. And I went to Cosmopolitan at 2 a.m. I met up with some – I mean, it's so funny because all the little pieces of it come back. I met up with some people. We had drinks at the Talon Bar. And then I continued to play a little, and then we got some food. And then I think it was about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. I settled in at a $25 dice table, and it was just a magnificent dice table, and I think I was there until noon or one. I think actually, wow. Now that I remember it, I think what happened, yeah, this is what happened. In the middle of that dice session, Mark Meltzer showed up, and I like had to, and then I got a comp, and I had another meal with him. What is it, at that Henry restaurant or something? I had like a meal or met him, did something, and then went back to the dice table and continued. It was just amazing, and it was this great cocktail waitress with these white gloves. It was just such a great night. And then I literally didn't. So this is New Year's Eve. And I remember finally leaving Cosmopolitan, and it was after 12 noon, like 1 p.m. And the sun was blazing. And I've like been like up since like the day before it. It's 1 p.m. And I just walked back to Paris, and I went up to my suite, and I just collapsed. Well, my phone had run out of charge like hours and hours before. And I like, I guess I plugged it in and went to bed. And then I didn't wake up until, I don't know, like midnight of that night. And by that time, you know, East Coast, that would be 3 o'clock in the morning. And I had all of these like frantic text messages because my wife like thought I was dead.
Oh, of course.
I was like totally off, because it's very unlike me to be off the grid. But it just happened. I'm sure that by the time like it was New Year's Eve, I'm sure by the time it was like 6 a.m. that morning, my phone was already dead, you know. And then I just went on with the whole Vegas night. So it was that was a really fabulous trip. Yeah. And the night before the sweet party night, I had had a really good run at Baccarat at Paris. So it was even better. It was the only time I ever cashed out, and I had $5,000 Paris chips. So that was pretty cool. Oh,
wow. That's cool. Well, here's a question. And first of all, your attention to detail, sir, is fucking amazing. From the waitress to the white gloves to the, you know, everything you can remember. Did your wife ever forgive you? Because, boy, I don't know if my wife would have if I didn't answer my phone on that.
I don't, you know, I think it was just the kind of thing where I mean, she understands the zone with the gambling thing, and she understands what that's like. And literally it just was the time difference and the time shift on that kind of thing. And also, I mean, this is enough years ago. So what are we talking, like 8 years ago? I have so much trouble figuring that out. I should note that. But you know, the thing about that is I think we were less phone obsessed then. Like I feel much more phone obsessed now. Mm. So, I mean, if you go back 10 years ago, we weren't really as glued to our phones as we are now. So maybe it was a little bit less unusual because you weren't constantly on Facebook and other shit like that.
Well, and if it was 8 to 10 years ago, in reality, let's face it, your cell phone battery lasted a good hot 2.5 hours before it was dead anyway.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was really good, really good trips. I mean, I had a lot of really good trips. I used to go to Vegas a couple times a year, and they were all interesting. I mean, they all were really interesting, all different types of interesting trips.
I was going to ask you how many. Can you even put a number on how many trips, or is that even a thought?
I don't. You know, I used to do five, I think I used to do 4 or 5 trips a year.
Oh, okay.
But I did that for a couple of years. But I don't remember. But, you know, remember, I went on a huge Vegas hiatus for a lot of years. I went when I was 19 with one of my college roommates, and that was the first time I played Baccarat in Vegas. And that's and I remember this. I was 19 years old, and our room at the Aladdin, which is where Planet Hollywood is now, I guess. Our room at the Aladdin was $19, and I managed to get upgraded to some like mini suite. And back then it was like $19 with no resort fees. And it was the first time I ever played Baccarat, and I played mini Bach, and I won like $300, and I was so fucking thrilled. I remember that trip when I was 19 years old. A couple of amazing things happened. One was I played Baccarat for the first time. I remember going to the Big Kitchen Buffet, which was like the buffet at Bally's, which was like the best buffet in Las Vegas. But this is 1989, so this is pre-Mirage, and you didn't have, you know, Bellagio and Mirage and all those places. Right. So Bally's Big Kitchen Buffet was really the place to go, especially if you're a 19-year-old college student. And then the other thing I remember is basically when my roommate and I wanted to go to this is my other roommate at the time. This wasn't Dave, because Dave didn't come on that trip. So it's but it was a we wanted to go to Olympic Gardens, which was like a really popular. I think Olympic Gardens is still there. It's a strip club, or they have mud wrestling.
They have recently closed. I think it was last year. It went from Olympic Gardens to OG's, and they had an issue where somebody was injecting dancers and possibly patrons with HIV laden blood.
What?
That is a true story. Google that shit. And OG has closed.
Wow. Well, back in 1989.
Way to be a downer, Eric. Jesus Christ, man.
So no, here's a great story. This is a great Vegas confession story. Oh. So we got in a cab to go to Olympic Gardens, and I had a plan. I you know, I'm pretty organized with my plans, and the cab driver said, "Oh, I can take you somewhere much better than that," or whatever. Well, it wound up being an entire ripoff scheme. He took us to some strip club, whatever kind of extortion place, where he probably got like $50 for dropping us off. Oh, but yeah, sure. It was just horrible, because they were just like pretending that there was going. It was just bad. Everything about it was bad, and it wound up costing me a ton of money, which like really upset me. But we like couldn't get out of there without buying bottles and paying money. And it was like run by these like Russian mobsters or something. It was just, and I couldn't believe we were so, and I was so pissed at myself, because I was like, how could I fall for this with this cab driver? But he was so talkative and did such a good sales job. And what was so funny about it is, you know, and of course, the reason why I kicked myself so much afterwards is because I'm like, we had a place we were going to. It's not like we got in a cab and we were drunk and we said to the cab driver, take us to a good strip club or something, and the cab driver like decided to rip us off and take us somewhere. This was like, we knew where we wanted to go, and we let him take us to this idiotic place. But you know, that's what happens when you're sort of young and stupid.
Sounds like my Navy days. It's about similar.
Yeah, but that's a you know, it just was a different thing. But but after that, I had one or two more trips. I had the trip that I remember, which was the Julio Iglesias trip, where I went with my wife. And all I remember from that trip, I have really interesting memories. So the Julio concert was fine, and my wife left early to go home. Oh, she wasn't even my wife then. I don't even know what she was. Whatever. The person I was with, who I happen to be married to now. She left. And we made this huge mistake, huge mistake. We went to the Flamingo Buffet, and she left, I think, a short time after Julio. Well, that I remember literally, I don't know what the Flamingo, if they still have the same rooms, but this is like, so say this is like 1990. I remember pretty much so like just holding on to the glass as if like please let me die. I have the worst food poisoning feeling in my entire life. It's like, please. And I did that, and it's actually, it's the second time, and this is a constant theme in my life. So I was a relatively thin teenager and younger person, and I gained weight as I got older and more comfortable and stopped moving as much. But I always, when I was a kid, one of the trips, and I actually, this was a New Year's Eve trip too. I was with my relatives in Arizona, and they decided to go to Vegas. So we stayed at the Tropicana, and it was a similar kind of thing. They used to like dare me, like how much food I could eat at the buffet, because my family basically likes to torture me, and they used to like to do that to me. And I got really sick from the Tropicana buffet. And on the one, when the Flamingo, where I was flying home the next day, I remember how bad that day was. And I also remember flying back to Phoenix after that other trip. But the thing that will bring this all back around as the recurring theme of my life was the first time I ever really gambled and won any money.
Hmm.
And I don't know when you remember your first real gambling win, because I think that's like sort of an important milestone in everybody's life.
No, yeah.
But mine was at 11 years old on the Oceanic cruise ship. Because at 11 years old, you were allowed to play bingo, and it was a cruise from New York, and they had something called Blackout Bingo, and I was able to fill up the whole bingo card and win, and it was approximately $350, and I was 11 years old in 1981, which is, I guess, in today's money would be about $1,000, so it was absolutely the biggest thing that had ever happened in my entire life, being an 11-year-old and winning that much money. So that was amazing. And that cruise was actually really amazing. And once again, I wound up getting sick from eating too much.
I was just going to ask you what the buffets were, if they were worthwhile on the cruise or not. Oh, man.
And I was so thin then. I was 11 years old, and they tormented. The funniest thing about that cruise, and I always talk about like social engineering and casinos and other things, but my mother was newly single, and my aunt also was with us, and my aunt is very close in age to me. She's only 10 years older than me. So if I was 11, she was 21. And all of the guys, it was an Italian, Oceanic was, all the staff was Italian. They loved my mother, and my mother was a really beautiful woman, and they loved my aunt, and we got like the best service everywhere and in the dining rooms and all of that. And I think they just would get bringing me like three dinners and so much food. And the other detail I'll always never forget is that I finally got sick, and you know, I had to take it easy for a day or two. And I remember my aunt like coming in the cabin at like 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning with pizza, going, "Michael, pizza, pizza." And I'm like, "What are you people like? You're trying to kill me." I mean, like, it's like they're tormenting me with food. But that's the kind of family I grew up in.
That's funny. That's,
can you imagine all the people in that bingo room that were pissed off that the 11-year-old won the game?
Exactly. Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah, and I don't know what they do anymore, but I doubt they let kids that young really play those games.
I don't think it's like it used to be. I mean, I grew up in Montana, and I could play the, you know, where they gambleize the slot machines technically in Montana. My uncle owned a bar, so that was the only chance I had to play. Otherwise, I never would be able to touch it. But, you know, I was playing the poker machines at like 12, 13 years old, you know. So, yeah, everybody remembers that. It's amazing. But that times do change, sir. You know, it's sad. So.
Hey, Michael?
Yes?
So these stories have been great, and I appreciate them, but I'm really waiting for you to share some of the more risque stories that I've heard over the years. Do you have any of those picked out that you'd be willing to share with the audience?
There you go. I was waiting for somebody to say that. Thank you.
Time to get rated R, bud.
Time to get well. I think one of the – I'm going to give my – should I give the okay, I'll give a startup story that was like that.
Okay, on a scale of 1 to 5, how startup
but
is this?
I did not do anything wrong. But
sure.
So we're at, I was RFB at the Stardust, which meant I got everything covered, and I was at one of the bars, and I was hanging out, and there were some guys. So I was in my 30s, and these guys must have been in their 20s, and I was hanging out at the bar buying a bunch of drinks for everybody, and we all had a bunch of drinks, and then I got to a point where I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to go gamble, or I'm going to go off on my way, because they were significant. I mean, I was in my 30s in my like gambling hangout kind of mode, and these were, I mean, to me, they were like young kids. Now they'd really be young kids. And we sort of parted ways, or they didn't see me go, or I settled up the tab. And then I ran into them the next night, and it was like three or four girls at the bar, like girls from, you know, of course I'm an East Coaster, so they were like girls from California, and I ran into the two guys I was hanging out with the next night, and they're like, man, where did you go, you don't know what happened after you left. And I was like, what? They're like, no, these chicks, you remember all those chicks? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, you know how they were staying at Circus? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, they invited us back to their room at Circus, and it was like the biggest fucking orgy. These were the corniest, crazy I had ever met. And man, you should have stuck around. You would have come back with us and hung out. I'm like, it's okay. That's great. But you can tell me more about it. I mean, I'll listen to your stories about it. But I was like, okay. That's
funny.
Interesting.
So every time somebody says, this is the funniest thing, you know, everyone always like talks about Circus. When anybody says Circus, I think young girls from California having an orgy. That's what it means to me when I hear Circus.
I don't think other people feel that way when they hear Circus, but that is unique. I will say that.
Actually, most people who think young girls and orgy at Circus wind up in jail.
Touche, sir. That's probably true.
Yeah, there's probably something so wrong with all of that going on. But I think, you know, part of what was cool about Stardust is you were close to Circus, and you were also close to Frontier. And Frontier was a pretty fucking bizarre casino to play at sometimes. So you had, and I used to play dice at Frontier, or they also had Sigma Derby too. So that was pretty good. That was pretty good stuff. I mean, but I think it was, you know, I forget. I mean, Stardust, just the location of Stardust was sort of interesting. If you think about it, you know, I mean, that was just, it was sort of a neat location.
And now it's kind of a vast wasteland, you know, like it's up and coming to be something again. But right now, I don't know that that's where I'd want to be.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it's such a shame, because it was a truly like a mid-roller property, but it was extremely well run, and everything they're like coffee shop was really good. I'm trying to think of, they had some funny shows at the end. You know who I did see though at Stardust? I did see George Carlin at Stardust. That was pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but I don't know. It was just a very homey property. But you know what was the weirdest thing about their suites is they had like the largest showers I have ever seen. Like literally you could fit 12 people in a shower. The only showers in Vegas I remember being consistently bigger than that are the showers in the Skylofts. In the Skylofts at MGM, because those showers, I think you could fit 16 people in.
Michael, I'm a pretty big guy. We were only able to fit 14, just for the record.
Is that it? Are you sure? I mean, maybe that's
I counted twice. Yeah, there were 14.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to always joke. I used to do lots of sweet parties in Vegas, but we used to name them slutty girl sweet parties. It wasn't really that, but we were cool doing that. But I always did actually have really pretty good sweet parties in Las Vegas, and lots of really good glassware. I always love glassware and sweet parties, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was good stuff.
So you're going to be in Vegas this Memorial Day weekend. We're going to be in Vegas this Memorial Day weekend. We have a couple of suites. Are we going to throw a party?
Woo-hoo. I think that would be a seriously good idea at some point.
All right.
Well, I mean, why are you in Vegas? I mean, this is just such a it's just such an amazing coincidence, right?
It's amazing how these things work out. Yeah. I'm actually going to the actuary convention that's going to be held at Treasure Island. You know, it'll be kind of boring, but you know, I understand there are more fun things happening there at that time. Any idea what else is going on?
Yeah, well, we might have Zorkfest happening, but you see, we've tried to stay away from pimping the Zorkfest thing too much. I came up with a new marketing strategy next time for Zorkfest, and that's going to be if everybody buys their tickets early, like in the first 3 weeks, basically have it sold out to capacity, we will promise we will never talk about it again until the event.
There you go. That's a goal, people. Come on, Deal. Let's make this happen.
All right, folks, if you want us to shut the fuck up about it, just buy your tickets early. There you go.
Yeah, you see, that's awesome. What we're going to do next time. Next time we're going to go, hey, if we reach this number of tickets by this time, we're just going to stop talking about it. So that's, I mean, honestly, some people might just buy tickets to shut us up.
God, that's funny. Man, I tell you, sir, I can't, first of all, thanks. For meeting you in Atlantic City and sitting up there in the suite and listening to your stories, some that we got recorded and some Julian and I didn't think we could record. All your talks, all your stories, everything going on, it is always just a fucking pleasure, man. I can't wait to see you again in Vegas for the Actuary Convention and Zorkfest as well. So thank you so much for your time, dude.
I appreciate that. The feeling is likewise. I think it's going to be a great weekend. We have so much going on that weekend. I think it's going to be awesome. I think anybody who hasn't signed on to some of the stuff for the weekend should definitely do it. I mean, the craps tournament is looking like it's going to be pretty epic now. I think we have over, what did I say, Eric? We have over 20 people so far, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's going to be great. And, you know, just the little Zorkfest plug. I mean, everything, you can mix and match whatever you want to do. If you just want to come to dinner on Friday night or hang out at the craps tournament, we also are welcoming people. Even if they, you know, don't want to be in the, you know, buy in for the craps tournament, everybody is welcome to come view the craps tournament. There will be, we will have drink tickets and there'll be a bar so they can get drinks and hang out. Everybody is welcome. We're trying to be really inclusive to everyone in the community. Of course, we would love people to come to Zorkfest, but if that's not your thing, come to Podcasters After Dark, come watch the craps tournament, come to the dinner on Friday night. And lots of great people are going to be at the dinner. I mean, you got the guys from You Can Bet on That. You got Scott from Vital Vegas. You've got this guy, Eric Rosenstock, I think is his name. Is that? You've got, you know, you've got Anthony Curtis, you've got Richard Munchkin, you've got Gene Scott, you've got, you know, these Vegas Confessions guys, you got Vito. Come on, finish. There's just, I mean, there are so many people, but I really encourage people to participate in some way, because I think it's going to be an absolutely fabulous weekend. And actually, I know it's going to be an absolutely fabulous weekend, because I've been looking at the details, you know, 7 hours a day, every day. Even if you're not into certain things, you know, and the schedule is up for Zorkfest, and it's a really good schedule with really good speakers and something for everyone. So I think it's really great stuff.
Yeah, more than appreciate
that being said, we went to the first event, obviously, and, you know, with the names that and this list that keeps getting bigger and bigger, mm-hmm. with all the people that are coming, is there something that excites you to see, something that's being done for the first time that didn't get done the first go round, or is there anything that you're looking forward to yourself?
Yeah, actually, I am. I think the stuff that Anthony Curtis is going to talk about, you know, from the historical perspective of the way they've done things at Las Vegas Advisor, and Gene and Brad Scott talking about, you know, what it's like to be frugal gamblers are just is just great, you know, because their story, Jean Scott's story, and she's doing this session at Zorkfest called How Dumb Gamblers Became Frugal Gamblers. I mean, literally, they, you know, they're giving their life story of how they went about what they do. And it's just such great stuff. And I'm so proud of the schedule, because when I look at that, there's so much great low roller stuff. And, you know, we also have the other session that Adam came up with, Travel Fanboy, Gambling for Greenhorns and Tight-Fisted Travelers. So, I mean, it's really hysterical stuff. So, I mean, we've got, like, the gambling talk going on, and then we also have all the casino loyalty stuff, but we've got some stuff just talking about, like, gambling philosophy, how best to get the most bang for your buck. But then we have all of the Total Reward stuff and M Life stuff, and then we have all of the other travel stuff. So I think it's super cool. I mean, honestly, I get erect every time I look at this
guy. Calm down, jeez. He said, "You heard it here first, folks."
Right? wait, there's a problem?
The problem is your wife doesn't notice, right?
Yeah.
Oh, what a low blow, sir. Damn.
Yeah, no. I think it's really, I mean, I honestly love it. And we've got, like, family travel stuff with Ed Pizza. I call him Pizza Man. I mean, so many cool people to hang out with. And I think, you know, Shane and Julian, what's even cooler now is there are going to be even more cool people to hang out with than even Atlantic City, which is really cool.
What's neat, too, on top of that, is you have the Everything AC people coming out, and a large group of those folks are coming out. So, you know, a lot of the people we met out there, and they're going to be flying into Vegas Memorial Weekend too. So that's it's going to be a big gathering, man.
Can't wait.
Yeah. And even my friend Michelle from Turning Left. Oh, Purchase.
Yeah, she's awesome. Mm. Yes.
Cool.
So, I mean, that's we've got a lot of good stuff going on. So it's pretty exciting. And that whole craps tournament thing on Friday night is really pretty cool, because, I mean, literally we have a private craps table for a couple hours, which will be great for taking pictures and hanging out and that kind of thing. So it's really pretty cool. I mean, I think it's cool. And also the craps tournament, you know, has worked out to be better. I'm going to give a little, you know, if we want to, we think we're going to cap the craps tournament at 32 people. We're a little bit over 20 people right now. I'm not going to guarantee we're going to cap it at 32, but we think we are. Well, the grand prize is a cruise, and we've listed that in the description. Nice. I think you have a choice of a five night or a seven night cruise, and it varies what type of cabin you get. But if you look at it that way, you know, if you've got 32 people, that's a 1 in 32 chance of winning a cruise. And that's not the only prize. You know, we've got the two nights at Treasure Island with Mystere tickets. We've got this great Jack Daniels package. And I have one or two other prizes that are going to be announced. So I think it's a pretty awesome deal for a charity craps tournament, you know. So I think the prizes are definitely solid, in my opinion.
Can I tell you what I'm excited about? We're going to have the regulation craps table with dealers and even so the email said with a pit boss, but I'm going to assume it's not a pit boss. It's probably a boxman. So when the dice get passed to me, the one thing I've always wanted to do in the middle of a table is to grab all five. Well, I guess they pass six, but I want to grab five dice, throw it down the end of the table, and just yell Yahtzee. I think I can get away with it.
No, dude, here's the thing. And I used to joke about this at Argosy, which is now Hollywood in Indiana. One of the dice dealers told me somebody did that one.
And did they get thrown out?
It never got that far. But, you know, I mean, literally somebody, I don't think they yelled Yahtzee, but literally, you know, when they push over the dice for you to choose what dice you want, somebody just picked them all up and threw them.
Yeah, it's... Michael, I'm going to warn you now, it's going to happen. This has been something I've always wanted to do, and I fear no retribution during a charity craps tournament.
You know what the funny, I need to do, I'm obviously behind on a lot of things, and I actually have a couple of Zorkfest, very, very confusing for people, but inclusive of myself. But I was actually talking to Anthony Curtis yesterday about you know, about the craps tournament, because he was funny. He basically said, hey, I'd be happy to play in a craps tournament, but I don't think anybody else is going to be happy for me to play in the craps tournament. but we were talking about the tournament strategy, and I just to give you a little, I'll give a little clue to your listeners who are doing it. I mean, or actually I'll ask the question. I know I'm pretty sure Eric's going to get this. What's the biggest difference when you play, or the biggest overall philosophy of how you approach the game when you play a craps tournament? And I'll answer that quickly. And that is basically that you're not playing craps. You're playing a tournament. It's a totally different thing. I mean, you have to realize that you're going to get a couple thousand dollars in fake chips, and your whole goal is to advance to the next round, not to hold on to your money. So if only three people, advance to the next round and you're number four, it doesn't do you anything. So if the person who advanced to the next round is, you know, a person with 7,000 in chips and 6,000 in chips and 5,000 in chips, those three people did, and you're the person after that with 4,000 in chips, well, that's not 4,000. You're done. So you have an advance. So you just have to get that through your head that it's not like your money. You know, you have to think of it like about advancing, you know, in a tournament. And that's, you just have to think about that. And my strategy for tournaments and is very similar to Anthony Curtis's strategy, but he put it really well. And, you know, when in doubt, put it out. That's it. And when I go into a tournament, any of those in a Baccarat tournament or a craps tournament, I go very, very strong the first couple of wagers just to try to double, triple my money. So pretty much so I'm either knocked out really early or I've now really increased my bankroll significantly, which puts me in a good position.
Seen people play a lot of weird bets and play differently than we normally would. You know, we have whatever it is, $2,000 to place bets and do something crazy with. So I know a lot of people are going to be putting money on hard ways, but it's going to be a lot of fun, man. I can't wait to play with a lot of our friends and just have a good time.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff. No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's the thing that always gets you about those kind of tournaments. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do as far as max bets on some of the center action, but sure, you know, a heavy bet on the 12 can totally change the game, right? If you're down to your last couple hundred chips, you know, if you put, you know, you're down and you table max on the 12 and you hit a 12, well, now, oh shit, you know, now this guy all of a sudden, you know, is totally ahead of a couple other people. And that's always sort of the fear that's there. You really got to watch the other players.
I have one question for you, Michael, real quick. Do you have any recommendations? I'm going to be staying at the Plaza, going to be playing there and gambling. I want to make a name for myself there. Any suggestions?
What are you going to be?
As far as the gambling, and is there anything I should do? Should I do slots versus table? Should I? I asked Eric a little about it, and he says, you know, just do what we do and play. But would you recommend anything? I heard you on a couple podcasts about, you know, your first buy-in, be big. And, you know, I'm not opposing to that, but is there anything else you recommend?
Are you not staying at the Dirty Bird also this trip, or are you doing both?
I am. I'm doing half and half, and so I thought I might as well check out the Plaza. So I get in Wednesday, and I'm going to stay there till Monday, and then do Monday to Wednesday at the Dirty Bird.
Okay. Well, you know what I think, what I would do as far, I'm very much a less is more kind of person, unbelievably, but I would concentrate all of your serious play at the Plaza and basically,
yeah,
not do any dirt. I mean, you've done a lot of play at the Caesars Harris people. So instead of giving them a little bit of play, which makes you not look so good, you're probably better off pretty much so not playing there at all, and give it all to the Plaza. That would be my strongest suggestion. And if you haven't played at the Plaza before, and it's not just a Plaza, you know, it would be any casino before, I'd like to see you do it in one mammoth day. Like, just lay it all out there, like most of your bankroll in one amazing, ginormous day, you know, whatever that means to you.
Yeah. Can I counter that real quick?
Yes.
They don't require a whole lot for him to get what he wants there. So, you know, his play is pretty strong to begin with. So, like, his normal play will qualify him for a two-bedroom suite. I don't know that they have – I mean, they have a penthouse, but, you know, what they expect for the penthouse, I don't think it's worth it. I would not be breaking my bankroll for comps to the Plaza.
Well, that's a good point. You know, well, I mean, honestly, I mean, and we're, you know, this is my whole thing all the time, talking generalities as opposed to specifics sometimes. If that's the case, you should give them exactly what they need for what you want to get, and then take the rest of your play and do it somewhere. You know, do another set of concentrated play, you know, somewhere else to get you what you want somewhere else. So what I'm guessing what Eric's saying is, and actually what you say, Eric, is a really good point. You have to realize a lot of my gauge on a lot of places that I play or that I play the most are places like Mohegan Sun, where the level of play is so high that I have to give the really solid days of play. Or like in Vegas, the places that I was most interested in are places like Cosmopolitan, where you just have to give them significant play to get anything. So I sometimes forget, like with the Plaza, you know, it's, you know, Eric's point is very well taken. You know, giving them too much play isn't going – there's going to be a very, very little additional benefit for you on that. You know, especially – especially honestly, if all you're really looking for is like one of their regular suites or regular rooms.
I'm just looking for a room, yeah.
Jay, your room plus food and beverage covered, your play already warrants that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, okay, and then you're good. And honestly, it's a very smart way to approach it, because I think sometimes, you know, and you know, this is interesting when you would say, you know, why did I like the Stardust so much? Why did it work so well for me? Because yes, I knew that I could be staying at a slightly more posh place. But A, I love the dealers and I love the environment, but I love the idea of having everything covered. And I also love – and also there were things that were more valuable to me at the Stardust. Yes, I got a suite, one-bedroom suite or a two-bedroom suite. I got all of my food and beverage covered. I got all of my room service covered. They always delivered before I got to my suite. You're going to laugh at this. They always sent them a bottle of Crown Royal, which was always hysterical because I've like never drank Crown in my whole life. Ooh, that's a good confession about the prostitute that followed me back to the room at Stardust. But and tried to steal the bottle of Crown. And
why am I not surprised?
But I also really liked that they had really good limos, so you could get limos wherever you wanted to. So it was just like, for the level of play that I was doing then, which was a lower level of play that I'm playing now, I just got everything I wanted and got treated like a rock star. And that was more important to me than a posher room at like Wynn and nothing else. And so that was why I really liked that, you know. But I mean, part of the thing that the Stardust did so well was that even though they were a mid-tier property, they still had really good room service and really all of that kind of stuff. You see, that's like one of the problems I have. And I think this is going to change with the new Fremont 18 thing. But like, I think the D is great. I love gambling at the D. But the hotel, I mean, the rooms are okay. But the fact they have no room service and the fact all of that kind of stuff, like that does like sort of rock my world. And not to sound snobby at all about it, but you know, to me, and we all experience our vacations differently, but I don't get away that much. And to me, when I'm in a casino or in a hotel, I want to be able to order my coffee up or order breakfast or order chicken wings at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's what I want to do. And Vegas is one of those kind of weird cities. You get back and you've been out all night and it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You want to fucking order some food. You know, you don't want to have to go down to McDonald's. So to me, that is a priority to me. And of course, you know, like if you gamble, you're obviously getting that stuff comped off. So that's, to me, those are things that are like important to me. To some people, that's not important to them at all. They like going out. Like I like to sit, you know, I like to sit nude with my coffee, you know, on my computer in the morning sometimes. Or
what'd you just say?
I take baths with a cigar and a drink, you know, or whatever, you know. I don't want to have to get dressed to go get my coffee, you know? I mean, this is vacation, right? I mean, that's not – that's
– That'll qualify as a Vegas confession. Thank you, that's Michael.
That's perfect.
All right. So I thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know it's now going on 1 o'clock in the morning your time. And by the way, we've now had two Londoners one week after another. So I think
we're London now.
I guess we got a trend going. Mm. So if you're a listener from London, you know who I'm talking to. Be prepared next week.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. So, Michael, thank you so much for your time, and I'll be following up with you shortly.
Been a pleasure, great. Brother. Thank you.
Thank you so much, man.
Absolutely, guys. Can't wait to see everybody in Vegas.
All right. Take care.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Fucking that guy. Oh my god. Eric, I don't too know. Much. Oh. And you know, and that's just a splash for us, as much as, you know, everything that you listen to him and talk to him and on a daily basis, man, just amazes me.
He keeps it lively, that's for sure. He's a funny guy.
He is. He's amazing. So that actually is kind of the bulk of this episode, because we want to have him on for those stories. And again, you know, VegasConfessionsPod@gmail.com. You write us. You tell us your story. We got a hotline. We absolutely love this stuff. And, you know, sometimes we go around the board, whether it's gambling or vice versa or history. Him, just his detail and everything he's telling, awesome. You know, so appreciate you guys' patience on that and everything else. We're going to go ahead and kind of do some quick shout outs now and wrap up the show. I actually do not have a shout out necessarily, but I do have an apology. And in fact, I just got done apologizing to my two partners as well, Eric and Julian. So I haven't really been, for those of you who, you know, have Twitter and you're following back and forth and et cetera, any social media, you've realized that I really haven't been on there much last couple weeks. It's been busy. It's not because I'm stuck up and arrogant. It's because work is just absolutely, it's busy. No excuse, you know, like Eric says, life gets in the way. But if you don't kind of see me pop up as much as I should be, that's kind of the reason. I just felt I just wanted to say that on the podcast and say, hey, this is why, you know, it's not because I'm done or tired or whatever have you. It's just, you know, things will slow down here for me on the job front. But for now, you know, it is what it is. And then it's getting our minds prepped for Memorial Day weekend. So that's what I got.
Good stuff. I do got one to mention. I have Saul, our buddy over at Las Vegas Junkies. He's finally got himself relocated in Las Vegas.
Yes.
It's official now, and I just want to give him a big shout out and congratulations. We're proud of you, man. You know you were looking forward to it. Finally happening. That's awesome. My other last one real quick is, I'm not one to jump on bandwagons. I gotta say, I'm on the Golden Knights bandwagon, man. And these fuckers can play some hockey, boy.
Yeah, they
These guys got down. I've been watching them all week, and son of a bitch, if everything pans out right, I think they'll be playing either the Stanley Cup while we're there, or they should be having the parade afterwards if they end up winning it. So that could be a lot of fun. Add that to our list of events.
That would be cool.
So speaking of events, my shout out goes to Keith Lyle. A bunch of us are going to be seeing Keith perform at Jokesters at the D Sunday evening after Zorkfest. So that is, just checking my calendar real quick, that is Sunday the 27th. He was able to procure a discount for all of our listeners.
Oh, man.
50% off. The flyer says 2-for-1, but I have a copy. You can buy tickets right up to the day of the show. If you hit me up on Twitter, at erosenthal1029, follow me, I'll follow you, and then I can DM you the discount code.
Man, that is freaking awesome. I caught wind of that, but again, shit, I haven't been on social media, so I didn't catch the ins and outs of that whole thing. That is too cool. Yeah.
No, he came through. He came through. That so awesome. I know there's a bunch of us that are going, and I cleared it with them. There's no cap on how many of them we can use.
Awesome.
So let's show up and support the man and laugh our asses off.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's awesome. So that is kind of that's Vegas Confessions. So you guys take care of yourselves. Again, Vegas is getting closer. We cannot fucking wait. It's phenomenal. Having Michael on just talking about it gets me even pumped even more. I can't wait to see everybody, and you guys enjoy. Cheers.
14 days. Cheers.
Cheers.
Your hands in the air, stick 'em up like you don't care. Face the wall, count to 10. We mow you down, reload again.
Oh no, here we go.
Disco who? Disco what? Get down on your knees and keep your trap shut. Disco this, disco that. When disco's down,
bodies there, piles of bodies everywhere. On the chairs, on the door, disco bloodbath on the floor. Hear 'em yell, hear 'em scream, just like someone's scary dream. Dig a hole, push 'em in.